Whoa. It's great to see everyone. I hope you've had a wonderful weekend. If you're visiting with us this morning, I am so glad that you came to worship God with us today. And my prayer is that you've been experiencing God so far. And as we continue with our lesson this morning, that you'll continue to do that and you'll enjoy your time with fellowship with us. This morning we're going to be talking about the book of Jonah, so please turn your Bibles there so long. The book of Jonah. I think what oftentimes happens when you say that you're going to be talking about the book of Jonah, maybe a first thought that comes to mind, it's a book about the fish. Or as other translations have it, a whale. Now I don't know if there are whales in the Mediterranean. I do not think so. Right, but it's a book about the fish. And even as you say that, you wonder, well, goodness me, can that be? Now, is there a fish big enough to swallow a guy? And I think, you know, if you look at photos like this one, you realize that there is a possibility. That's a whale shark, I think, by definition. For those who do BSc, I think that still qualifies as a fish. So you see pictures like that and you realize, boy, there are actually fish out there that might be big enough to keep a guy for 3 days. But sometimes we think that's the point of the book. It's a book of miracles of this fish that swallowed a guy. He stayed in the belly of the fish for 3 days, came out, and continued his life. Or maybe you hear about the story of Jonah, the book of Jonah, and you think that it's a story about obedience. That God gave Jonah a very specific instruction. I want you to go to the people in Nineveh, and I want you to tell them and give them my message. And instead of obeying God, he started fleeing in the opposite direction. And sometimes we could think, boy, you know, maybe the message of the book is how we can be disobedient to God sometimes. You know, sometimes it's very clear what God's will for our lives is, and sometimes God tells us to do something, but instead of obeying, we flee in the opposite direction. So maybe that's the point of the book. You know, if you know the book a little bit better as well, and you're quite perceptive, you might have some thoughts that the book is all about Jonah's judgmental spirit towards people that he believed did not deserve God's mercy. And how, again, as we did the series on Judgment Call, how sometimes you and I can be that way. How we feel like, you know, there's a certain criteria, or there are certain people that deserve God's mercy, and there are some that don't, and we have a judgmental and critical spirit. So maybe the essence of the book is to teach us not to have that kind of spirit. And I think all of those things are relevant, and all of those things are very important lessons to take from the book. But I think once you start looking at the book a little bit closer, and I would encourage you to read it at home. We're not going to read the whole book today. We're definitely going to be talking about the story. But as you read the book a little bit closer, you realize that the crux of the story is actually something completely different. And that's what I want to talk about today. What lies at the heart of the story of Jonah? And my prayer is that you and I might be learning some things this morning about that, and might walk out with a new perception about the book, and prayerfully be inspired. Yeah, but it is a fascinating story. Instead of reading it, I'll just give you a rundown. I'm sure if you grew up in a church or grew up in some form of going to Sunday school, whatever, you are quite familiar with the story. But it is a fascinating, and I want to emphasize, historical account. It is not a parable. It is not some sort of story that God conjured up. The Jews actually believe that it was a historical account that actually took place. And Jesus himself says it in the New Testament, clarifies that it is a historical account for us. So, but it's a fascinating story. And it starts off with in chapter 1 where God appears to a Hebrew prophet named Jonah, and he says, I have a task for you. I want you to travel to Nineveh, which was the capital of the Assyrian people, and I want you to give them a message that I will give to you. Now, the story continues where Jonah didn't exactly obey God in his instruction, and instead he fled in completely the opposite direction to a place called Tarsus. Now, Tarsus was literally on the edge of the known world in that time. So I think he wanted to make it very clear to God that he is not interested at all to travel to these people to give them his message. You know, God had a different plan. On his way to Tarshish, sitting in a boat with crew members, God sent a very violent storm to intercept Jonah. And the storm was so violent that the crew members started casting lots to find out, back in the day, that was actually quite a normal thing to do, to find out who was responsible for this calamity. Who is the responsible person that God is trying to punish through this? And believe it or not, the lot fell on Jonah. And they approached him saying, What are you doing? Who are you? Who do you serve? And he explains to the crew members upon the boat, he says, I serve the God that created heaven and earth. I serve the God that created this storm. Obviously, at this, they were terrified, asking, well, what should we do? And Jonah said, well, just throw me overboard. Now, I don't know why he didn't want to jump overboard and help the guys out. I don't know if that's a normal thing, but he said, look, rather throw me. I ain't going to jump. And reluctantly, the guys picked him up and threw him overboard. And at that, the storm completely disappeared. But God didn't just leave it there. As Jonah sank to the bottom of the ocean, he sent this great fish. Now, I don't know if it was a fish like that. Sent a great fish to swallow Jonah. And he remained in the belly of this fish for 3 days. Now, that must have been an interesting time. In chapter 2 of the book, we literally see how Jonah sits inside of the fish praying to God, reflecting and meditating on all the things that has taken place. And maybe, just maybe, God is actually serious about this Nineveh thing. He actually wants me to go. And in chapter 3 of the book, we see the story almost start up for a second time, where the fish spits out Jonah, and God comes to him a second time saying, look, I was serious about it. I want you to go. I want you to travel to the Assyrian people, to this city called Nineveh, and I want you to give them the message that I'm going to give to you. I want to give them the opportunity to be close to me. And Jonah this time obeys God, and he travels to the city. It was quite a large and important city of about 120,000 people, as the book records it. And as Jonah arrives on the first day of preaching God's word and the message to the people, the Bible explains that they believe the message and they immediately repented of their ways. So earnest were the Assyrians that when the king heard the message of Jonah, he declared a nationwide fast for everyone. He said, man, woman, child, everyone, nothing to eat, nothing to drink, not even the animals. Everyone is fasting. And by that, maybe, just maybe, God will be compassionate on us. Even as you listen to the story, you realize, boy, there are so many things that you and I can learn from that. There are so many things that you and I can take from that. But I think at the core of this story lies the heart of God for people. I think at the core, at the crux of the story, is God's pursuit of the Assyrian people and how He would do everything possible to reconcile them to Himself. Have a look in Jonah chapter 3. So it's not a story about Jonah. In actual fact, if you read the book, Jonah is painted quite negatively in the book. The story is not about him. The story is not about the Assyrian people. I believe the story is about the God that you and I serve. Have a look in Jonah chapter 3 here. We'll be reading there from verse 10. It says, when God saw what they did and how they turned from the evil ways, He had compassion and did not bring upon them the destruction He had threatened. But Jonah was greatly displeased and became angry. He prayed to the Lord, O Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home? That is why I was so quick to flee to Tarshish. I knew that You are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me to die than to live. I mean, in chapter 3 here, you see how when the Assyrians repented, it says, instead of continuing with sort of the punishment and the judgment that God proclaimed upon them, it says his compassion was aroused when he saw how they turned from their evil ways. But Jonah was not that excited about it. The Bible describes that he was greatly displeased. The literal Hebrew translation said that he burned with anger against God because of his compassion. And then as Jonah prays, you and I almost get a window into the heart of God. Now, Jonah prays to God. He says, you know what? I knew that this is what was going to happen. I knew that you are a God that pursues people. I knew that you are a God that is compassionate. I knew that you are a God that is gracious and merciful, abounding in love and slow to anger. See, I knew that your love knows no boundaries. I knew that you do not let up. When you set your affection on someone and you go after them, I knew that if the Assyrians would just turn from their evil ways, I knew that you would forgive them and be compassionate. That's why I didn't want to go. Because I knew if I went, that is what you would do. You know, it is such an incredible window into God's heart and into God's nature, as Jonah prays about it. You just see God's heart that he has for people. In this case, it was the Assyrian people. But you see his passion and his desire to go after them and pursue them and reconcile the Assyrian people to himself. And that's obviously where Jonah comes into the picture. Jonah was merely God's plan to seek and save the Assyrian people. Jonah was merely part of God's plan to reach out to them. To stretch out his hand and say, I want a relationship with you. Jonah was merely part of God's plan to say, look, I want to be reconciled to these people. Now go, give them my message. That is God's heart. That was his heart for the people. And you can clearly see throughout the story that nothing stood in God's way. Nothing stood in his way. I mean, Jonah decides, I'm fleeing to the other end of the earth. God doesn't say, oh, okay, well, you know, that wasn't exactly the best plan. Let's reroute to plan B here. No. He goes after Jonah and says, I'm going to send a storm. Then the guys throw him overboard. Instead of, I don't know, just putting him on dry land so he can walk back to Nineveh, they throw him overboard. And God doesn't just say, oh, come on, guys, why did you throw him overboard? There goes my plan. No. He sends a fish. Leaves him in the fish for 3 days. The fish spits him out. And then he comes to Jonah again saying, all right, now I hope you get the message. I want you to go. There was no barrier in God's way. There was nothing that could keep him from being reconciled with the Assyrian people. No boundary that he wouldn't cross. No price that he wouldn't pay to have them. You see, the incredible thing is that has always been God's heart. Now, the book of Jonah and the story of Jonah is just another story explaining how God is in pursuit of people. It's just another way. I mean, but it has always been his heart. Think about the Old Testament. Think about what happened in Genesis with Adam and Eve. I mean, there is the plan. They are having a great time in the Garden of Eden. They have everything that they desire. They have a very connected and close walk with God. They literally get to speak face to face with God, walk with Him in the garden. And there is one thing that they should not do. And that is to eat fruit from the tree right in the middle of the garden. That's the only thing. If you guys could just leave that alone, you'll be good. But they decide, you know what? We actually want the fruit from that tree. Satan tempts them. They eat the fruit. And they disobey God. Who is the one that initiates the relationship again? It's God. Yeah, the Bible literally describes that Adam and Eve ran away. They went hiding because they realized they were naked. God is walking through the garden saying, Adam, where are you? Where are you? Why are you hiding from me? I mean, I'm the guy that put you in this situation. I'm the guy that gave you all of this. Why are you running from me? See, even in the Garden of Eden, he was the one that initiated the relationship. He was the one that went after Adam and Eve, even after they disobeyed him. He was the one that stretched out his hand saying, you know, look, I want to be close to you guys again. But that's the whole story of the Old Testament as well. You see that with the nation of Israel. You see that with the Israelites being in Egypt for 400 years in slavery. You see God initiating the relationship, seeing how much they suffered and the misery that they experienced, and He sends Moses. He says, Moses, I want you to go. I want you to bring all my people to me. I want you to go and rescue them for me. And again, you see it throughout their history. Oh boy, they disobeyed God, they lose heart, they literally raise up Asherah poles, carve out wooden idols, bow down to them saying, this is now God. God had never says, all right, look, I have had enough. I'm done. I'm not pursuing you guys anymore. Every single time He sends a prophet to them. He sends another leader to them. He sends another king to them saying, guys, please just turn from your ways. I want to be close to you. I want to be intimate with you. I want to have a relationship with you. I want to walk with you. It's always been God's heart. I mean, think about the New Testament. Think about the story of Jesus. You know, the story of Jesus isn't that we were in such a big mess that the only sacrifice God had left was to send Jesus so we can have somehow a relationship with Him. That wasn't the point. Think about it. I mean, at a certain time, Jesus decided, I'm going to leave the fellowship of the Trinity. I'm going to leave the adoration of thousands upon ten thousands of angels here in heaven. And I'm going to dress myself in human likeness, in flesh and in weakness. And I'm going to go down to earth and stretch out a hand. And say, I want to be close to you. I want to have a relationship with you. That is the story of Jesus. Is that it's God's pursuit of His people. He's always had that heart. I think probably the closest that I can, I really want you guys to get the point. I think the closest you and I can come to understanding it in human terms is a boy pursuing the goal of his dreams. Now I'm going to take the married brothers back here a very long time. Maybe for some a very, very long time. But brothers, can you remember when you pursued the goal of your dreams? Not, all right, yo. Seeing some of the sisters nudging, you know, you should have done more, or, you know, come on, why are you not doing it anymore? Sisters, can you remember a guy coming after you and pursuing you? Can you remember what that was like? Now, I'm fascinated, because I'm sort of involved in the campus and the singles ministry in the church. I'm always fascinated to see when a boy meets the goal of his dreams, what happens to him. It is astounding. A soldier, a warrior, a hardcore bulldozer, all of a sudden turns into a little piece of tissue. He is, man. You know, he watches Notebook. Brothers, can you remember what you would do? Is there no cost too much? You take a flower, spontaneous flowers, not just one day, every day. If that is what it will take. You figure out what is her favorite flowers and you will give it to her all the time. You would write a long whining note and cards expressing your heartfelt gratitude and appreciation for who she is. It feels like there's not enough pages. You just keep on writing and keep on writing and you write it quickly. It doesn't take a lot to think about it, but that's your heart. You take her out for romantic dinners. Boy, to expensive places or her favorite place. One of the campus guys, I've seen campus guys that are willing to live on tuna mayo sandwiches just so that they can have money for petrol to drive to be with the girl of their dreams. The guy's losing weight. He's in terrible shape. But he feels, if I could just have enough money just to get to her, just to be with her, just to talk with her. That would be enough for me. I've seen that. And I think that is God's heart for you and I. That is God's heart. That He pursues people. And in this case, it was He's pursuit of the Assyrian people, but he still does it today. You might sort of ask yourself why or how. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a situation where you've looked at something incredibly breathtaking in nature and just felt inside of the core of you, wow, that is just incredible. Now, I had it in this past week on Friday. I don't know if any of you heard the thunder or saw the sunrise. You know, I saw a sunset again yesterday. But as I heard that, as I saw the sunset, as I saw the sunrise, there's something built in the core inside of us that just, you just think, boy, God is so awesome. It's just, you cannot express it. When I was in Lebanon last year, I saw a place called Jethro Grotto, and it was almost like the Congo Caves. And I remember just walking there looking. I could not say anything. I've not seen anything as breathtaking as that. I think God creates those things to pursue your heart. That is the intent that He has. As He gives you that sunrise and that sunset so you can look at that and go, wow, man, God is a good God. Now let me tell you, if you thought the guy of your dreams wrote you great notes, you should read this. There are notes in this book that if you read it and you grasp it, that would literally make your heart explode. God writes books expressing His love for you and I. He convinces us, gives us stories to recount, to meditate on, to memorize. Saying, guys, the point is, I am in pursuit of you. If you just read it. Guys, that is God's pursuit. As it wasn't just His heart, even today, He is still in pursuit of His people. That is His core heart, and that is the story of Jonah. That is God's pursuit and His passion to be reconciled with people, to have a relationship with them. Now, I think what often happens when you hear something like this, and when you read a book like this, is you might wonder, well, who is God in pursuit of? I mean, I understand in the story it was the Assyrian people, and I can definitely see God's desperation, and He uses Jonah, uses the storm, uses the fish, sends him again. I can clearly see that God is desperate to be close to them. But I don't know if God is in pursuit of me. And I think sometimes what happens in our mind is we kind of think that God's pursuit is only reserved for a person that is justified to be pursued by God. Somehow in our hearts and our minds, we think that God's pursuit is only reserved for those who are totally committed. Or those that sincerely love God with all of their heart, soul, mind, strength, sincere motives. Those are the individuals that God is in pursuit of and that God wants. You know, and I think that is sometimes how we can feel and how we can think. Or you think that, you know, God is really in pursuit of those who are not really sinful. And even if you speak to those people that you don't think are sinful, they still say, yes, I'm such a bad sinner. That doesn't help you at all. Because you just think, boy, they are just, meh. But somehow God's pursuit is reserved for those who are not sinful, really. Sort of the holy individuals. And somehow, sometimes we can feel like, you know, God is putting up with me. But boy, that line where, like Donnie explained, that line where God's going to say, enough. You know, you have been uncommitted long enough. You've been in sin long enough. You've been whatever it might be long enough. You know, that line is coming soon. We sometimes have a perception where, you know, God is merely, He's merely sort of just holding on for us. But He's not really in pursuit of our hearts anymore. So I think sometimes that could be a picture that we have of God's nature and His heart. But let me tell you a little bit about the Assyrian people. About who they were and how God pursued them. You know, the Assyrian nation was synonymous with sinfulness and cruelty. I mean, they were a people that they were unsurpassed. There was no nation, no race, no empire before them that were crueler than they were. I mean, they were bloodthirsty, violent-loving individuals. And what they would do is they would have a policy where if the Assyrian people, with Nineveh being the capital of that, goes against another nation, they would take those defeated individuals and send them off to a completely different land to rob their country from them, to rob their nation from them, and to make it easier for them to control those individuals. That was their merciful option. When they attack the city and there's not a surrender or submission to their terms, or there's any opposition, so they attack the city and there's any opposition that they face, they unleash the full wrath of the Assyrian people. And what oftentimes happened is they would infiltrate a certain city or a town and completely obliterate it. They would burn all of their houses. They would kill the people, and sometimes, they would literally mutilate the prisoners of war that they capture. And the stories written on clay tablets would literally say that the Assyrian peoples would sometimes skin their prisoners alive. It's literally people being alive, you are getting skinned alive, and they would keep the skins. The mutilation would also involve that they would cut off people's ears, they would cut off people's noses. If you talk too much, they would literally pull out your tongue and gouge out your eyes. So they would keep you alive as a prisoner, but that is the cruelty with which they would treat you. If you didn't want to submit or if there was any opposition to their rule. You know, they were a brute of a people, a race of warriors, violent and bloodthirsty, sinful to the max. And yet God pursued them. God pursued them. You know, sometimes we could box God and say, you know, it's this type of individual that God pursues. But if God pursued the Assyrian nation, being so steeped and loving of their sinful ways and their cruelty and their violence, how much more you and I that are here today, that are trying to live a righteous life. You know, God is in pursuit. And I think that is the whole point of Romans chapter 5. It should come up on the screen here. Verse 6, it says, "You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrated His own love for us in this, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." See, while you were still fleeing from God, while you were still loving your life of sin, while you were still groping around in the darkness, while you were still lost, God sent Jesus. And Jesus is the proof of God's love. It's not the cause of God's love. Jesus didn't sort of go back up to heaven and change God's mind about how He felt about you. Jesus was a demonstration of how God feels about you all along. Jesus was the proof of God's love and not the cause of it. And my guess is as we sit here this morning, I think all of us are probably at different places. Maybe this morning for you, you are visiting church for the first time. Or maybe you've been coming out over the last little while. And maybe for you, you've been studying the Bible and looking at some passages and scriptures that have challenged your life and you've realized some things about God and His nature. And I think sometimes if you're in that position, I certainly did this, you can often feel like, you know, I can clearly see, Jacques, that God pursues the holy or those who are already committed to Him. Those who are living the life or trying to be good Christians. I can see that God's pursuing them. But you don't know me. You don't know what I've done. You know, you don't know what I'm doing. And if you did know, you would not be trying to persuade me that God is pursuing a relationship with me. But He is. The mere fact that you are here this morning, if it's your first time visiting, maybe you've been coming out for a while, maybe you've faced some certain decisions, the mere fact that you are here this morning means that God is in pursuit of you. He has arranged your life for you to live in Cape Town. He has somehow organized your life, have sent people into your life to pursue your heart. Maybe you're sitting here this morning and you've made a decision to leave God and you're standing on the other side. God is still saying the same thing. The mere fact that you are here today, God is trying to persuade to win your heart. He is in pursuit of you. Maybe this morning you're a young Christian. where recently you were baptized, recently you decided, you know, I want to live this life of being a Christian, being a disciple, I want to get on the narrow road. And sometimes I think when you just sort of cross over the line, you can feel like, you know, I can understand that God pursues those who are lost. I can understand that God pursues those who are far from Him and really needs Him. But now I've made a decision to be on this side of the line. It's almost the parable of the lost sheep where, you know, God leaves the 99 behind and He goes after the one. I'm part of the 99 now. Now I'm found. So I don't think God pursues me anymore. I clearly see it for others, those who are far from Him, but not for me. And what I want to say to you is God is continually in pursuit of you. He is continually trying to put things in your life to win your heart, to win your devotion to Him. He is like a husband that didn't just pursue his wife before they got married. He is like the husband that continually pursues his wife all the time. Feels like he can never do enough. That is the God that you serve. So if you young Christian this morning, you feel that way, He is still in hot pursuit of you. He still wants a relationship with you. Maybe this morning you feel like, boy, I've crossed the line a very long time ago. Now, I'm sort of an older Christian. I even feel part of the furniture of the church. And I can clearly see that God would pursue those who are far from Him. I can clearly see that God would pursue the young Christians. But boy, looking at my life, things haven't exactly turned out the way that I thought they would. You know, if God really was in pursuit of me, I should have been married by now. If He really was in pursuit of me, I should have had kids by now. I should have had more kids by now. Or I should have had a better job by now. You know, but my life didn't exactly plan out the way that I thought. I don't feel sought by God or pursued by God at all. In fact, I'm going through a very tough time or tough times lately. And what I want to say to you is God is in continual pursuit, and you must remember that even tough times and discipline are things that God uses to get your attention. That is what Hebrews says, that He will put you through hardships. He will put you through pain. He will put you through tough times. He will in fact discipline you to get your heart back to Him, to get your attention, to say, look, I'm still pursuing you. I've not given up. I know we're already in a relationship, but I want all of your heart. That is what I desire to have. So no matter where you are this morning, God is in pursuit of every one of us that are sitting here today. And that is the book of Jonah. That is the story of Jonah. You know, God was in pursuit of the Assyrian people, and He used Jonah as part of the plan to chase after them. But that story still applies to you and I today. God is still in pursuit of a relationship with you today. Now, where does that leave us? My prayer is that as you reflect on the story of Jonah and as you read it at home, and it's really only four chapters, I would encourage you to do that at home and really to meditate and reflect on that. My prayer is as you reflect on the story, that you will feel grateful for the God that you serve. And you will look at Him again and go, wow, you know, that God pursues me. He's still passionate for me. He still has a desire to be close to me. I pray that that will inspire you with gratitude. Secondly, I hope, and my prayer, is that we will be inspired to develop God's heart. That as we look at the story and as we reflect on Jonah, that we will also feel like, boy, I want to develop this heart that God has for others. I want to develop this heart that God has, this intense desire that he has to be close to others. That's how I want to live my life. I think sometimes it's very clear that people are far from God, that people need God. But I think sometimes we could be like Jonah, you know, where we are fleeing in the other direction. We know that God pursues other people, but we don't want to be used by Him. And we get busy in our schedules and busy in our lives and busy with our own priorities and whatever it might be. My prayer is for you that you feel inspired to develop the heart of God, where you say, you know, I want to go after people. I want to convince people that God is pursuing them. And I want to help them to get to know the core heart and the core nature of the God that you and I serve. Amen.